tape number 7 of this series on the story of world civilization conceived of in its underlying spiritual meaning. Gordon Brown.
So let's continue on tape 7, right where we left off on tape 6, which was where our survey of this incredible God-impelled mission of Mary Baker Eddy, outlined there on the left-hand wing of the chart of the triptych, was in its concluding stages, wasn't it? And this means that within the perspective of the panorama as a whole, we were engaged with the 6,000-year period of the history of civilization, in its parallel relationship, of course, with the 6th day of creation, and as determined basically by the 6th synonym in the divine order, truth. Itself unfolding through the full sevenfold range of the spiritual tones of truth in its aspects as mind, as spirit, as soul, as principle, as life, as truth, and as love. That's right, isn't it? The 6th of these tones, truth as truth, marking the actual founding by Mary Baker Eddy of Christian Science in world consciousness from 1866 to 1910. And we'd followed the progress of her wonderful mission, hadn't we? First in terms of the 7 evolutionary stages of the writing of the textbook Science and Health, and we were nearing the end, secondly, of the story of her church organization, which illustrated the workings in practical human experience of the divine life principle elucidated in Science and Health. Now we remember that, of course, don't we? And we were thinking particularly about the year 1901, when she informed the world through its own press who her successor in leadership would be when she was no longer personally present. Namely, none other than man in the image and likeness of the Father, Mother, God, man, the generic term for mankind. So that in the following year, 1902, came that 5th major revision of the textbook, when the order of the chapters was completely rearranged, you remember, to meet the spiritual requirements of man, the generic term for mankind. And that year, 1902, as we saw, marked the beginnings of the 6th evolutionary step in Mrs. Eddy's own founding career, relating this necessarily with the 6th day of creation, or the day in which this very manhood in Christ truth has dominion over all the earth. And we were about to acknowledge when the tape came to an end how wonderful it is that if we follow this year, 1902, across into the triptych's main center panel, it runs parallel with the emergence in world consciousness of the great Western Christian civilization, which itself symbolizes, albeit in counterfeit material form, of course, this same generic world man of the 6th day of creation. Now we remember and appreciate that most significant correlation, don't we? So continuing now with the story itself, we have to observe how 2 vital new factors regarding the progress of the church organization are set simultaneously in motion. One is the building in Concord, New Hampshire, Mrs. Eddy's hometown, of her own branch church, to be known as the Concord Branch. And the other is that the site is now being cleared for the building in Boston of what is to be known as the Mother Church Extension. And now a most significant event that takes place late in 1902 and which ties up spiritually with these other two events, when in the Mother Church Manual, and only there, the number of church directors is increased from 4 to 5. While in the deed of trust that inaugurated this board in 1892, the number remains the original 4. Then, and mark this very carefully, in 1903, in order to secure the extra land required for building the Mother Church Extension, no less than 10 new trust deeds have to be legally instituted, in each of which the number of directors remains the original 4, despite the fact that only a very short while before their number in the manual had been changed to 5. Well, what does it all mean? Undoubtedly, it's part of divine wisdom's far-sighted plan for the future of the Christian Science Church. Because amazingly as it seems, in each of the 10 new deeds, Mrs. Eddy incorporates a remarkable safeguard against any possible thwarting in the future of the divine purpose. And this is that stroke of spiritual genius. She makes it incumbent upon the law of the land, represented by the legally drawn up deeds, to compel obedience to the law of God, represented by the church manual. Each deed, that's to say, includes in its irrevocable trusts the manual's final bylaw, which says that no new tenet or bylaw shall be adopted, nor any tenet or bylaw amended or annulled, without the written consent of Mary Baker Eddy, the author of our textbook Science and Health. This final bylaw at the tail end of the manual thus contains the estoppel, which, if obeyed, ensures obedience to every other bylaw and every estoppel clause throughout the book. You remember in the Old Testament how Moses' rod got turned into a serpent, and how Moses reversed what the serpent stood for by taking it by the tail, thus turning it back into a rod again. Well, in Christian Science, the church manual is the leader's rod, which must never be allowed to become a subtle serpent holding the people in bondage to material organization, but always a healing, liberating staff on which to lean. What Mrs. Eddy's inclusion of this tail end bylaw in the legal deeds ensured, therefore, was that when she was no longer at the helm of the movement, the board of directors could not legally, as an ecclesiastical hierarchy, take control of and perpetuate the Mother Church organization so dictating future limitations for Christian science. At her passing, in other words, the mother aspect of the first Church of Christ scientist in Boston, together with its board of five directors, would cease to function, and the church would assume the title given it in its own deed of trust, namely the First Church of Christ Scientist in Boston, Massachusetts, not the Mother Church, whose governing board of four directors would be self-perpetuating and would take care of the running of the church as the local Boston Church, having no jurisdiction whatsoever over any other church. So now let's turn to another legal deed that was drawn up in 1898 and given to three trustees constituting the Christian Science Publishing Society. This was an irrevocable trust which the trustees were to manage entirely on their own responsibility. Yet both this deed and the church deed were interlocked under the manual because there they were subject to Mrs. Eddy's jurisdiction. When, however, at her passing, the mother aspect of the organization would be no more, the two deeds would function each in their own legal right, ensuring a system of checks and balances against possible corruption and ecclesiastical monopoly. And therefore, also in 1903, a new bylaw in the manual gave to branch churches total democratic freedom of action, liberating them from even general official control by the Mother Church. Now that's the bylaw on page 70 of the manual, isn't it, under the heading The Mother Church and Branch Churches. And more than this, in 1904, the year the Concord branch was finished and dedicated and represented to the field, the model for all branch churches, there appeared on the cover of the Christian Science Quarterly a depiction of a large olive branch, detached from its parent stem, such that if it were to be planted in the ground, it would develop roots of its own and become an individual, independent, self-reliant tree. Now, incidentally, the quarterly lesson sermons first made their appearance during that three-year interval from 1889 to 1892, when there was no central church organization, showing therefore that the lesson sermons were designed originally to feed the branch churches only. Now, can you see horizontally where we are at this moment? The main tone is truth as truth, isn't it? Which within the structure of the center panel is where in the 6,000-year period Christian science itself is discerned, discovered, and founded, and where in the sixth day of creation God says to man, "Behold, I have given you." That's so, isn't it? Well, the Concord branch, dedicated in 1904, being Mrs. Eddy's own branch church, is said to be her gift to the Christian science field. So, again the words, "Behold, I have given you." What this independent, detached branch church signifies, therefore, is the very essence of Christian Science itself, namely man, spiritually self-governed under God alone, and beginning to form, in consequence, the one grand brotherhood of generic man. When therefore we come to the year 1906 and the Mother Church extension is finished and dedicated, this is the very point at which, in Mrs. Eddy's words, cross yields to crown. The modest edifice of the Mother Church of Christ Scientist began with the cross, she said. Its excelsior extension is the crown. And this was in her dedicatory address on this occasion, the title of which was Choose Ye. Words which she took from the book of Joshua, when Joshua was about to bestow on the children of Israel their covenanted promised land. A land given them, it said, for which they did not have to labor. Choose you this day whom you will serve, Joshua says to the people, whether the gods which your father served, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And Christian Scientists in 1906 were in just this same position. Would they choose the way of individual and collective self-government under God, a state to which the Mother, like Moses, had painstakingly led them? Or would they let themselves be dominated externally by the gods of their forefathers? God forbid that we should rebel against the Lord, said the children of Israel. And you can almost hear the Christian Scientists echoing this, can't you, in 1906. God forbid that we should not obey the inspired provisions of our beloved leader and mother, Mary Baker Eddy. So once again, just look across at this time of the 1906 dedication of the extension to where we are in the center panel. And the tone now is that of truth as love, isn't it? The final seventh tone of the sixth day and sixth period. And as you see, it's where the right-hand wing of the triptych opens out for close examination, just as the left-hand wing does at the point of truth as truth. No problem there, is there? You see, what the extension truly stands for is the extending to all the world beyond the confines of sectarian control of all that the model Concord branch represents, namely individual and collective self-government under God, extending universally to mankind. It signifies, therefore, a precisely parallel situation to where on the day of Pentecost the teachings of Jesus himself began to extend and apply to the whole civilized world. Because here, in the tone of truth as love, the teachings of Mary Baker Eddy, in their absolute science and system, are represented as extending to all humanity in just the same way. And so to conclude our survey of the church organization, we come to the years 1907 to 1910, corresponding to the seventh day of creation, or the day of divine love itself. Here the mother has led her children to be divinely inspired individuals under God alone, if only they'd be spiritually sensitive enough to understand her and abide by her provisions. Therefore, they can dispense with her personally, and with the teaching symbol of her mother church, even as the children of Israel could dispense with Moses personally once he'd led them to the promised land. Because this is what this right-hand wing of the triptych represents, make no mistake about it, the Christian Scientist's promised land. And therefore, as 1910 draws nearer and Mary Baker Eddy prepares to leave the present scene, do not think for one moment that the apparent dissolution of the Mother Church means the destruction of the Mother Church. It didn't mean that in the case of the body of Jesus, did it? Quite the contrary. Why should it mean it, therefore, regarding the symbol of the body of the human race? What is signified, rather, is that having fulfilled its exemplary teaching purpose, for which as a symbol it was originally instituted, it's translated, like Jesus' body, from symbol to divine idea, to the Christ idea itself that it always lain behind the symbol, namely the holy four-square mother city as the body of all the world. In other words, the Mother Church ascends in divine science back to where it came from, to God and to his throne, as surely as the idea of ascension, the idea of spiritual and scientific translation, takes place in the consciousness of Jesus. Because then, just as the Holy Ghost, typical of this Holy Mother City, descends to the world on the day of Pentecost, what we need now to understand is that a precisely equivalent divine happening is destined to take place when, in the tone of truth as love, we make our transit to what is represented by the triptych's right-hand wing or panel. Well, there it's been necessary to spend a great deal of time with columns 1 and 2 of the left-hand panel, but in the case of columns 3 and 4, we won't be so meticulous. Column 3, you see there, is concerned, isn't it, mainly with the periodicals and the founder's other writings. All 16 of these other writings you can trace there in their chronological order. And when it comes to giving this column adequate spiritual attention, I couldn't do better, I know, than recommend to you the book written by John L. Morgan, entitled Mary Baker Eddy's Other Writings. It's a splendid book, beautifully put together and documented. Suffice it to say, for us just at the moment, that whereas what column one is concerned with is the textbook itself, declaring the divine principle of Christian Science or the Word, column two, dealing with the church and the college, is where the workings of this book are being illustrated demonstrably in human experience, and therefore accentuate the Christ. Column three, to do with the periodicals and the other writings, is then where the whole matter of the textbook's practicality is gone into and recorded in very great detail, and therefore has the accent on Christianity. While column four, the so-called world column, you see it there, has to do with the tumultuous repercussions of truth on the surface of world consciousness, and therefore points to the activity of science. It's where, in Mrs. Eddy's own words, the world feels the alterative effect of truth through every pore. Here I would recommend perhaps the appropriate chapters in the book Civilization Lieth Foursquare. So in turning particularly to this world column, pay great attention to begin with to the remarkable parallel happenings that accompany the actual revelation of Christian Science in the 1860s and 70s, and which are one and all suppositional opposites, the seeming reverse of the revelation itself. Perhaps the most outstanding is Marxian communism, which precedes the discovery of science by just a few years. Another is the Darwinian theory of material evolution, coming as the opposite of spiritual evolution as taught in Christian Science. Then there's Mendel and his laws of heredity, opening the way later on for the science of genetics and the DNA code, the exact antithesis of the true sense of heredity and parental origin, which Christian Science brings to light. Hartmann, at the same time, philosophizes on the theory of a psychic unconscious as the source of conscious human experience, a theory that is developed so extensively by Freud and Jung as the years go by. The exact opposite, clearly, of the science of the mind, of the total universe, as the source of all real consciousness. Then, as the apparent denial of the infallible principle controlling the universe, of the divine science of being, the Roman Church, not surprisingly, institutes the dogma of papal infallibility. But here are a couple of much more positive happenings. Simultaneously, we're told, in the realm of mathematics comes the exciting discovery of the mathematics of infinity, which would seem to relate, wouldn't it, with what Christian Science calls the spiritual mathematics, where everything is infinite indeed. But perhaps one of the most significant happenings in view of what Mary Baker Eddy is later to provide for her church organization is the fact that in 1867, 1 year after the Great Discovery, Britain's colonial empire begins to resolve into a commonwealth of sovereign dominions. That's to say, the mother country begins to yield up mandatory control of her territorial possessions in the same way that later on the Christian Science Mother Church will be designed to yield up her control over her worldwide family of branch churches and to grant them independent status. We do see the parallel, don't we? Of course we do. Now, because what is happening spiritually is the revelation of the science of the whole world's being, perhaps all we need refer to as we bring our survey of this left-hand panel to a close are certain outstanding discoveries in the realm of the physical sciences, purporting as these do to be the science of the whole world's being, and preparing the way for the eventual translation of physics into divine metaphysics, that is, for the final translation of matter into spirit mind. So following the discovery in the closing years of the 19th century of radium X-rays, wireless telegraphy, and so on the physical scale, and Freudian psychoanalysis, for example, on the mental scale, by far the most outstanding and far-reaching discovery in physics is what is called quantum theory or quantum mechanics at the dawn of the 20th century. Because it's not too much to say that this penetration into the innermost quanta of the material atom, which quantum physics initiates, becomes the dominant issue in high energy physics throughout the whole of the rest of the century. As a result, unparalleled advances in the different fields of the physical sciences begins to proliferate on a scale never known before. Let's never forget that whatever the phenomena presented to the material senses, the divine science of Christian Science is the determining reality that lies behind them all. Hence Mrs. Eddy's words, and this is Miscellaneous Writings, page 61, that the education of the future will be instruction in spiritual science against the material symbolic counterfeit sciences. And the reason for this? The fact that every material belief hints the existence of spiritual reality. And if mortals are instructed in spiritual things, it will be seen that material belief in all its manifestations reversed will be found the type and representative of verities priceless, eternal, and just at hand. So we don't have to be afraid, do we, of any of these symbolic counterfeits that are continuously appearing in their many different forms. The only thing to be afraid of is if we regard them as reality itself, with purposes of their own, apart from the purpose of eternal divine science, which is their reversal and spiritual resolution, the translation, that is, from the apparent language of matter into the language of spirit itself. Think, for example, of how around 1902, when the textbook appears for the first time in its four-square matrix structure, typifying the divinely creative, unseen source, wherein our identity as man in God's image and likeness, the man of the sixth day of creation, is moulded and formed and brought forth into tangible expression. Because that's what the textbook is beginning to do for us, isn't it? Around that time of 1902, Carl Gustav Jung develops on an unprecedented scale the theory of the so-called collective or psychic unconscious as the source that is supposed to mold and form and bring into conscious expression man in the image of mortality, a source said to be teeming with the images of mankind's mythologies down the ages, what Jung calls the archetypes, the mythological gods and goddesses, spirits, beasts, and demons, which claim to come to the surface of consciousness and devastate the lives of mortals. The precise opposite of all that comes welling up out of the depths of the principle of the Christian Science textbook, when we learn to approach its text with the mind of Christ instead of with the human mind. So is that counterfeit concept really the source of our conscious experience? Certainly it isn't. The real source is the unfathomable depths of the all-seeing, all-knowing mind of divine science as taught in Science and Health. And again in 1905, when the truth is truth tone is dominant, do you see it there? And therefore is the essential counterfeit of Christian Science itself, Albert Einstein evolves the first of his two famous relativity theories, based, you remember, on the mathematical equation E equals mc squared, revealing the fact that what appears to the senses as matter is wholly a state of radiant electrical energy, and therefore not solid matter at all. How close we are getting, therefore, aren't we, to the translation of so-called matter into the radiant energy of spirit itself. Hence the prospect of the translation of quantum physics as the innermost structure of the material atom into the infinitesimals of Spirit's own elemental forms. Because these infinitesimal quanta are what constitute the chemistry and the mathematics of the elements and molecules that derive from electro-animal magnetism and are supposed to make up both the material universe and man's mortal body. But we've got to wait until we enter the precincts of the triptych's right-hand wing in the tone of truth as love, the final tone of the sixth day of creation, which we're now about to do, before we understand with sufficient spiritual depth, sufficient scientific order and precision, just what the nature of divine science is that is supposedly counterfeited by all these matter beliefs and modern material inventions. Do you remember what Mrs. Eddy herself said about these things? "Oh, we cannot oppose them," she said. "They seek the finer essences. They light the way to the Church of Christ. They're preparing the way for us." And that's Miscellany, page 345. Lovely, isn't it? So just one last word before we leave the left-hand wing in the tone of truth as truth, which is the story of Mary Baker Eddy's discovering and founding of the eternal Christ science. What do you think of this assertion put forward by the devoted investigators of the Great Pyramid in Egypt, that their measurements of its internal passageways reveal the date of December the 3rd, 1910, the year of the founder's passing, as marking the end of an age? Extraordinary, isn't it? Never mind at the moment if it sounds far-fetched. What one is told has been deduced. Well, at last then, to the final tone of the sixth day and the sixth period, truth as love, which, as you see, leads us out to the right-hand wing of this great panoramic structure, taking into account, therefore, the remainder of the 20th century from 1911 to the year 2000, and opening up in doing so the epoch of the seventh millennium. Are we happy about that? Truth in the aspect of love. Let's take it across the different columns, just as we've done with all the preceding tones. And in column one, truth, universal and all-encompassing, the truth about everything in the universe as one whole, indivisible truth, meaning by this the fullness of what constitutes the womanhood of man, and therefore the motherhood of God. Truth as love. How remarkable, therefore, but really how beautiful, that the text of this tone in the Science and Health Exegesis in column two should declare, under the heading Perfection of Creation, that nothing is new to spirit. Nothing can be novel to eternal mind, the author of all things, who from all eternity knoweth his own ideas. Deity was satisfied with his work. How could he be otherwise, since the spiritual creation was the outgrowth, the emanation of his infinite self-containment and immortal wisdom? You see, the new era in Christian Science opening out at this juncture does not, in fact, present anything basically new. When the textbook was brought to its state of completion and fulfillment between the years 1907 and 1910, and the answer to the question, what is God, was finalized in the fundamental order of divine science, all that could subsequently come to pass would be the emanation, the unfoldment of what was already on record as the teaching principle of his own self-containment. And we do see that, don't we? It's so beautifully important in the light of what is impending. In view of which, animal magnetism was fully unmasked, which means that in the Adam story, column 3 at this point, Cain, the disruptive, divisive murderer, is banished to oblivion, dispatched into the land of Nod. Cain, who would split, rupture the brotherhood of man into a multitude of greedy, acquisitive, self-destroying factions. So that what Jesus, in the next column, is bidding his disciples do, and look at the parallel in the left-hand wing with the idea of the Mother Church extension, is to bear witness to the resurrection amongst all the nations of the earth. Because this, of course, is what Christian Science is essentially all about, isn't it? Because it's what happens on the day of Pentecost as the outcome of the first messianic mission. And it's precisely what applies in the realm of the second messianic mission as we move now from the left-hand wing to the right-hand wing of this vast panoramic framework. So let's rejoice at this beautiful correlation between the founding mission of Jesus and its Pentecostal extension to all the world, and the founding mission of Mary Baker Eddy and its extension likewise to the entire body of generic man. Because what we're going to be looking at now is what amounts to being the second phase of the leadership of the apocalyptic God-crowned woman. Because she it is, isn't she, who symbolizes generic man. I don't know whether any of you listened not long ago to a beautiful performance in the Albert Hall of Mahler's Eighth Symphony that sets to music part two of Goethe's Faust. One was listening to the music more than paying attention to the words and captions that kept popping up on the television screen. And yet, almost at the end, there was thrown up a sentence, and one could scarcely believe one's eyes as one read it, because it seemed to apply so marvelously to what concerns us at this moment as we make our transit in Christian Science from the first leadership phase to the second. And the words, very simply, can you believe it, were these: the eternal feminine leads us forward. The eternal feminine. The God-crowned woman of the apocalypse, by reason of her consistent union with the divine principle love, leads us forward. And she does this as the Holy Spirit of God, descending from heaven in the form of the four square city, that is, as the mother of us all. How'd you like that? Isn't it lovely? No change in the leadership of the woman herself, in her union with the divine principle love. The eternal feminine leads us forward, then. How beautifully true it is in Science, isn't it? Now, probably the best way of launching our thought into this Truth as Love era, and therefore into the triptych's right-hand wing, is by contrasting the way in which the textbook and the chapter, The Apocalypse, makes the transition from Revelation 12, the triumphant story of the woman herself, to Revelation 21, where the Holy Mother City descends in consequence from God out of heaven to restore the human race to its rightful God-bestowed heritage. The contrast, that is, between the way in which Science and Health does this and the way the Bible does it in the book of Revelation. In the case of Science and Health, the transit is immediate. Revelation 12 leads immediately to Revelation 21. But in the case of the Bible, Revelation chapters 13 to 20 intervene before the mission of the woman in Revelation 12 finds its own natural fulfillment in the setting up on earth of the holy four square city and the consequent salvation from mortality of the whole human race in Revelation 21. Remember, therefore, the words of Mrs. Eddy to the Mother Church Extension in 1906, because this is what the extension would seem to be all about, wouldn't it? Choose ye. Choose you this day, whom ye will serve, whether the gods of the Amorites or God himself. It's the way Joshua puts it, in effect, to the children of Israel, isn't it? So which of these two apparently divergent choices is the one to follow? And the answer, surprisingly enough, is both. Because the wonderful thing is that when, with spiritual sense, we watch the story actually unfold, they both move forward together. That's to say, from 1911 onwards, not only does the Holy Mother City begin almost immediately to reveal itself, in accordance with the transition in science and health from Revelation 12 to Revelation 21, but at the same time, the horrendous happenings depicted from Revelation 13 onwards, as the rising up of the beast from the sea and the beast from the earth, culminating in Revelation 17 as the appearing of the great city Babylon, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth, these manifest themselves also. And I'm sure that those of us who've lived through this major part of the 20th century have no difficulty in relating the apocalyptic imagery with certain of the fearsome world happenings, do we? And yet at the same time, we're living witnesses to the most glorious continuity of the revelation of Christian Science emerging out of the founding mission of Mary Baker Eddy, and therefore in that sense not being new to spirit, but marvelously new, spiritually revolutionary in fact, to Christian Science as an organized religion. As new, in fact, to the thought of the student at the time of Mrs. Eddy's passing, as was the descent of the Pentecostal Holy Ghost to the followers of Jesus in the era following Jesus' own career. Now, this is something that surely we must learn to understand and appreciate without prejudice, without personal bias, if we are to move forward in Christian Science under the uninterrupted and uninterruptible leadership of the divine principle love. The leadership, that is, of the eternal feminine, which we thought about earlier. So may we turn again to the chart of the triptych for a moment. You see in the main center panel, don't you, how the entire panorama is under the control of what God is as infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love, in the first of the seven columns, yes, and the way in which this divine isness functions as the Word, Christ, Christianity, Science, or the foresight of the Holy City in the last of the seven columns. Yes? And these two absolutely fundamental divine factors we speak of for convenience today, don't we? But only for convenience, as the seven and the four. Now, it isn't by chance, though I assure you one didn't see it at the time when the chart was being compiled, that the order of the seven is immediately adjacent to the founder's mission in the left-hand panel. You see that that is so, isn't it? And that the order of the four is immediately adjacent to the outcome of the founder's mission in the right-hand panel. So that the left-hand panel really has the accent on the seven and the right-hand panel on the four. But this doesn't mean to say, of course, that the four doesn't feature in the left-hand panel or the seven in the right-hand panel. Because as we know, it's impossible spiritually to have the one without the other. Nevertheless, it does seem, in each case, to be this particular accentuation of the seven in the one instance and the four in the other. And therefore, may we now think for a moment, please, of the build-up of the Apocalypse chapter as we find it as the 16th chapter in Science and Health. We know, don't we, that it unfolds through precisely 16 distinct sections of text. Do we? And the first 12 of these, including the opening one from Revelation 10, are wholly to do with the mission of the God-crowned woman, and therefore apply particularly to the left-hand panel, while the remaining four to do with the setting up on earth of the four-square mother city apply in consequence to the right-hand panel. Are we happy about that? Because it's enormously significant in view of what the woman does for the world in the left-hand panel when she reveals the truth of the Holy Mother City by laying its 12 foundations and opening its 12 gates that mankind itself, as signified in the right-hand panel, may learn to enter in. Mankind, of course, does not actually enter and take possession of the city itself until, in the epoch representative of the seventh millennium, which we see there, don't we, at the foot of the center panel. But in the era of truth as love, the era of the right-hand panel where we are now, it's shown us divinely and in science the way of doing this. But aren't we actually learning to do this very thing right here and now? We should be, and I'm sure it's what we are praying more and more to do. And therefore, if the woman's instructions are obeyed by her followers at the time when she herself leaves the human scene, the logical outcome is the unfolding to consciousness of an understanding of the city itself, just as when the children of Israel obeyed the provisions bequeathed them by Moses, and they themselves, under the leadership of Joshua, entered the promised land. Because the Holy Mother City, which is about scientifically to unfold to us, is indeed humanity's promised land. mankind's divinely bequeathed inheritance under the will, we might say, of the Father, Mother, God. Do you remember how in the early stages of these recordings we thought a lot about the imperative will of the Father, Mother, God? Because we can see now how spiritually logical it is for us to learn to accept our immortal identity or body as the eternal bequest of the divine principle love. Now there I see we're getting very close to the end of the tape on this first side of tape 7. So I think we pause there, turn the tape over, and carry on at this point at the beginning of side 2.